Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast, and our author guest today is
Marissa Silver,
and you are the author of many books, but the one we're going to be talking about today is
The Mysteries.
This book was so good. It was a really interesting coming of age book. Mm-hmm. And I think like it was different than a lot of other coming of age books I've read, because it actually was a coming of age book for different ages. There was a coming of age book to a young adolescent, or two young adolescents kind of on the cusp of, I guess, what we would call tweenhood.
Well, they're only seven, so they're not.
That's true. They're not quite there yet.
I don't know. Maybe 7-year-olds are more tweeny than I remember them being.
Nowadays they are, but I don't think back then they were really tweeny. And when I was a kid, it was starting to kind of cross over to that. But it definitely, I think, like that whole older kid age is so interesting because they do change so quickly. And then there's also almost like a parental coming of age book, a coming of parenting age. So there's a few different stories going on in this book. Would you like to tell the readers in your words what the premise of the book is about and where it came from?
Sure. Without spoiling too much, this is a book that it takes place in 1973 in St. Louis. And it is about primarily two young 7-year-old girls, a little girl named Miggy and her friend Ellen. And it is sort of peripherally also about their parents, as you said. And it's about what happens when a really sort of untoward tragedy happens in these two families, and how all of them and every individual in them reacts and goes forward from that place of tragedy. And I love what you said about it being a coming of age for everyone. I mean, a wonderful writer named Antonia Nelson, if any of you have not read her wonderful stories primarily, she's really extraordinary. She once said to me that every story is a coming of age story. And that really stuck to me. I mean, I think every story in some ways is an awakening. So yeah. This story, The Mysteries, is definitely an awakening for, in particular, this one 7-year-old child named Miggy, who sort of has to contend with what's happened and understand a little bit more deeply and more complexly how the world is formed. But as you said, it's also an awakening for the parents, who are sort of shaken out of their complacency. Sometimes to the good, sometimes to the negative.
Right.
But all of them, I think, through the course of this novel, have sort of an illumination about how life is filled with much more complexity than we are even able to cope with. And how sometimes you just have to surrender to that.
Yeah, I think there's so much, I think, that a lot of people are going to be able to relate to, whether or not you're, a parent or whenever you were a child or a parent now, there's the fact that Miggy is just like bursting with energy. She is bursting with energy. She's got all of these thoughts and ideas. It doesn't always jive with other kids, especially the way Miggy would want it to, but especially the way her mother would want it to, because as a parent, you want your child to thrive and have friends. And I think for a lot of kids, depending on how it is, sometimes that doesn't always happen at the time that everybody is happening for everybody else. But as a parent, you want to see your child interacting positively with other kids. And it's not that Miggy she's not bad. She's just, she's got all of this energy. And
Miggy is today we have all these great euphemisms. We would call her a a spirited child, right?
A very irrepressible was the word that came to my mind.
Back in 1973, we didn't have all these euphemisms.
And right, of course.
I've been called a piece of work. And he's a really curious, challenging, bursting with a kind of physical and mental energy that is sometimes uncontained and sometimes becomes destructive. I think she courts danger. I think she's vexing to people. She's sort of both, in my mind, you know, sort of wonderfully alive and sparking and also incredibly challenging. And so this is the girl who has to sort of, what she wants more than everything is, than anything, is for life to bend itself to her will, which, you know, doesn't happen for any of us. And it certainly doesn't happen when you're seven. So the story is really about her sort of confronting a kind of significant moment when life does not bend to any expectation that she has of it. And she comes into contact with this. And as you said, she's not someone who kids really like. She's sort of bossy and demanding and wants to, you know, sort of control everything. But she does make friends with this one young girl named Ellen, who's also seven and who's quite different from her. She's much more retiring and self-contained for, you know, reasons of her own. Her family situation is very different. But these two, you know, kind of spark to one another for different reasons. And it's not always just the opposite attract reasons. It's you know, why do people become friends? Why it's complicated. And I hope the book sort of describes a little bit of that complication. But one thing I do feel about Miggy's character is, you know, and I'm sure many parents have had this experience where there's often kind of a really bright, charismatic child. I don't mean bright in the sense of intelligent, although maybe that is makes you uncomfortable as an adult, and your kids are really attracted to them. And I think that's who Miggy is for Ellen. She's sort of got this unbelievable charisma and strength and power that a parent might say, you know, you don't need to be controlled by this girl, but it's hard to pull away.
Right. Yeah.
We have those sorts of relationships as well. Sometimes we have the wherewithal to pull ourselves away from them, but certainly a seven-year-old doesn't.
No, I thought that Ellen was very sweet. And I wanted to kind of put back there that I didn't think that Miggy was bad by any means. She was who she was. And at that point, she could get away with unapologetically being who she was. And she had this friendship with Ellen. And, you know, everything is, it's sort of told through the eyes also, like I said, of their parents. And you mentioned that they have very different backgrounds. And I thought that was really well done as well. There's not a lot of interaction between Miggy's parents and Ellen's parents, but there's almost those mental gymnastics that you do when you know that your child is connected to somebody else and you know there's another family involved with that, but you're kind of on the outside of it. You know, I think, especially in suburbia, because this was a suburban story, you're forever sort of trained to compare your own family to the families around you and wonder if they're secretly judging you. And I got some of that from both sets of parents as well, which I thought was really well layered.
You know, it's true for sure. I think nowadays we're much more, as parents, we're much more involved with the families of our children's friends. Maybe that's part of the whole helicopter moment that we're all in, but for better or for worse. I mean, I've made some wonderful friends from knowing the parents of my kids' friends. But back in the 70s, my experience at least was that it was quite different. I don't think my parents knew any of my friends' parents. I think you dropped them off, you drove away, and you pick them up. I think that was, and you know, I grew up in New York City, actually, in which case I took public transportation, you know, quite early on. But I don't think there was that much interest. I don't think that was the point. It's like your kids were kids and their friends were their friends. It wasn't this blending of the generations.
That's so different because I was a kid in the 80s and I think I was kind of, as that was crossing over, because I do recall times when my parents would drop me off someplace, but they did kind of try to blend a little bit. And then certainly my brother, who's 10 years younger than me, that was just not a thing that happened. If you had a play date, the other parents wouldn't go off and get to have some time by themselves. The other parents would sit and kind of have to make conversation with the mother of the kid who the play date, you know, is being hosted. And thinking about it, to think that your child could have their own life and their own friends.
Well, I think it was also, you know, still a generational divide in which, you know, parents thought they were grown-ups and children were children. And, and I think that's changed a lot over, you know, in so many ways, in the way we dress and the way we talk and the way, you know.
I say this to people all the time. I say that, you know, we've kind of gone beyond that. And I mean, we're a generation, at least my generation, seems to be very comfortable with saying, yes, we're going to go see that Marvel superhero movie together, and we're all going to wear our t-shirts, and we're all going to talk about Captain America afterwards, because we can relate on that level, versus, you know, that's nice sport, but you'll grow out of comic books when you get older.
Yeah, it's very different. And I think in some ways it allows, certainly in my novel, Miggy to have a really private childhood life that is, although her parents are aware of her, what she's doing, she really lives a lot in her own world and her own imagination and the world that she makes for herself, in her room, in her backyard, and her, and it's very separate from the parents. They're not playing with her. I mean, my parents never played with me. I don't know, maybe that was a particular thing, but I do think that that was sort of generational. Like, that wasn't the point of being a parent, was not.
Yeah, my son actually said to me last night, mommy, you're a grown up, but you're also kind of like a little kid, because you'll play video games with us. And
it's not the experience of parenting that the two little girls in my book have. They have experiences of being quite separate from their parents.
Yeah.
So many of the things that happened during the course of the first half of the book, which, you know, some of them are innocent, some of them verge on danger, happen pretty much without the parents recognizing it. And I think one of the things that I tried to, you know, the book is set in 1973, which was a pretty interesting year in terms of what was going on, right? So there was Watergate, there was these, you know, Vietnam War very slowly winding down, there was feminism, which sort of reached people differently in different times in different parts of the country, and depending on, you know, what their backgrounds were.
Right.
And I think, and, you know, there are many more things going on, but for a child to be sort of both aware and unknowing when all that's going on in a house where the television was turned on when the kid was in the room, where, you know, there wasn't that kind of hiding. Her parents are not trying to hide the world from her. And so it sort of also allows for children to try to sort through this barrage of confusing information in their own way.
Right, because Miggy's parents kind of spoke about politics with her, sort of. She knew how her parents felt about Nixon, and she expressed it herself. Her parents were also, I got the impression, they're kind of in that weird period where people think that the whole hippie movement had ended, but it still was really going, because really towards the end of the 60s was when things began to blow up. And they were very progressive in their own way. They didn't want to use language for parts of the body that was not correct language. I think, what was it, correct language for...
our bodies, ourselves, generation of women who were taught to suddenly start using the right words for our body.
Right.
And I mean, her parents definitely came of age in the 60s and were very much, they were in university. They were, you know, very much part of all the sorts of, you know, protests and causes, but they also have moved into, I mean, to me, they're going to be the kind of people who you will be surprised 30 years from now that they were part of that. You know, there are people who will choose a different kind of life. They're not going to be they're not going to be lifelong rebels. They're not going to be lifelong activists. They're people who are going to settle into a fairly conventional life, but you'll find out, oh, wow, they were part of this protest and that movement. And you know, there's so many people that we meet who, you know, don't appear to be
part of that, right? Or you would think now are not progressive. Yeah. You would think, you know, well, they're so conservative. And then when you hear right. about their former selves when they were younger, you're like, wow, really? I would never have guessed. Ellen's family on the outside seemed to be a little bit more conventional, at least to Miggy's family. Mm-hmm. But there's other things going on there. Ellen's mother has a lot going on emotionally. She just had a baby. And
sort of postpartum depression.
Yeah.
She also is the daughter of a mother who had significant mental problems. So, you know, there's a question in her mind, which I think terrifies her, and also in her husband's mind, whether or not this is postpartum depression or whether this is sort of a precursor of something more troubling. It was also a time, you know, one of the things I did when I was researching the book was I got a pregnancy manual from the time, which, you know, talked about postpartum depression like it was a little of the blues, the baby blues. And, you know, so it was also a time when women's sort of health issues were not taken all that seriously. So yes, her family is quite different, more conservative, more, her parents are not going to be talking to her about parts of the body. They're not going to be talking to her about their, you know, political views. She's more sheltered. And she's also a girl who sort of has a lot of mother hunger, which is, you know, one of the reasons she's attracted to Miggy is because Miggy's mother is there and present. And
I think that it's very interesting that you looked up a pregnancy manual from that time, because even nowadays with talking about postpartum depression and other things, I don't know if we've ever really come out of that. I mean, we would hope that we've come further than the yellow wallpaper.
Yeah.
But there's still so much, you know, people don't want to talk about that. And I know in the 70s, surely they did not talk about it. And I really felt for her because she wasn't present. Like, she wasn't emotionally present. And you do find out just more about where Ellen came from and where she came from. And My heart broke for her too, in a way. But
one of the things I'm always kind of interested in, this idea of good and bad mother, which is something that, despite all of our kind of, I don't know, more progressive ideas around parenting, there's still this weird binary, you know. And we are quick, and especially women are quick to judge one another, right? Good or bad mothers. And I've written about this quite a bit in different books that I've written, certainly in the book Mary Coyne, I wrote about it. But I'm very interested to get beyond that and to not sort of pose parents as good or bad, but to sort of just understand the complexity of parenting and the complexity for these two women, and especially, and the men and the husbands too, to a certain extent, of finding your definition both within and without parenthood. You know, we're not just, And even if you're not working, I mean, Miggy's mother works and Ellen's mother doesn't. But so the struggle is to figure out, who are you beyond that? And at this particular moment when all the, you know, the Ms. magazines and the feminists and the, you know, all that stuff is coming at you strong, telling you that you better be more than just mom. So that's a really complicated time, I think. I mean, it's complicated still for women. And I think it was particularly complicated then, because these were women who were raised in the 50s by mothers who did not have those kinds of expectations and did not, you know, sort of rear their children to think in that way. So both these women are kind of at a crossroads in terms of how are they gonna claim themselves in the world.
So is Ellen, because Ellen is, as we've mentioned, she's very drawn in by Miggy. They form a bond. They do seem genuinely, she genuinely loves her as a friend, but some of those abrasions that we talked about before are kind of starting to, I think, become a little bit abrasive towards Ellen. And there's a really interesting sequence, and I don't want to get too much into it because I think that the readers will, you know, really should just kind of immerse themselves in it. But where Ellen gets to spend time with children that are not Miggy, mm-hmm. and that in a way seems like part of Ellen's coming of age story, because Ellen being quieter is kind of eclipsed, and it's almost like she gets a chance to be out of that orbit and begin to figure things out for herself.
Yeah, and I love the way you've read this book. You've read it with so much nuance. Thank you. But
thank you for writing it with so much nuance.
So yeah, I mean, Ellen, you know, it begins to sort of come out from under, not fully, but she definitely begins to have a sense of who she is beyond being sort of the, you know, the ardent follower of Miggy. And this causes quite a rift for them. And Miggy doesn't quite know what to do with the fact that her acolyte is no longer quite as malleable. Things that I think we see in friendships of children all the time. I mean, especially, well, I had two boys, so I'm not entirely sure what girl friendships are like from the parental perspective, but I think they're much more mercurial, you know,
yeah.
than the kinds of friendships my children had with other little boys. So there's a kind of like shifting and changing and emotional, you know, turmoil that's going on, even for little girls. And it doesn't seem to stop.
No, it doesn't. And I think maybe that's why in the beginning, I kind of was wondering whether to say they're on the cusp of tweendom, but maybe that's just how friendships, you know, friendships between girls could be.
I think it's a really... I think that a lot of emotion, the kind of emotional nuance that women bring to bear in a lot of things in the world, they starts young, starts really young.
Oh yeah, without, for sure. And I think it's picked up on much earlier than people would think.
Yeah, one of the sort of biggest challenges of writing this book, but also one of the most satisfying things, was trying to figure out how to really be inside the mind of a seven-year-old. It's been a long time since I was seven, and it's a challenge, you know, for a writer. You have to sort of figure out, well, how close am I to that girl? Am I right there so that I have no perspective beyond hers? Do I have an adult's perspective? Am I able to use language that she wouldn't use? You know, there's so many choices as a writer that you're making, and you know, what I wanted to be able to do was to be right inside both girls' experiences. At the same time, use a kind of richer language, use a kind of more a sense of perspective that wouldn't pull us away from them, but would also honor the kind of fullness of the experience that they're having. You know, I think a seven-year-old's mind is a rich thing. I think it's complicated. I think it's as nuanced as any mind. And so my goal was to really be able to figure out a way to be able to demonstrate that.
I think you were really respectful, and you captured the magical thinking aspect of that part of childhood really, really well, especially somebody who is, I guess, more sheltered, because depending on where you grew up, you might not have that, and, you know, whatever your experience is. But I think in the neighborhood that Miggy and Ellen were growing up in, as two young white girls in a suburban neighborhood, you know, there was kind of me being in that role just, you know, like a decade later, there is kind of a bit a comfort in it, where you can be in your backyard and everything can be a dragon, or you could, you know, you could really think that you're going to magically bend things to your will, as you were saying. I think that gets kind of pulled away a little bit slower for some kids, and especially, but at that age, you're like at peak.
Right. You're, I think what happens in the novel is that things change for Miggy in that regard.
much faster than they might for somebody else.
You know, the kind of the magic that she was able to bring to her world. It both ends in a certain way, but also there's more magic to come. I mean, I'm a believer that the mystery never ends, that the things that are sort of unknown and unknowable that make life sort of rich and confusing and also, worthwhile, just keep opening up. You know, even at my age, I'm still recognizing the kinds of the mysteries that are unsolvable, but that sort of give my life a lot of richness.
And is that where the title for the book came from?
Yeah, I mean, it's really about all those questions that are unanswerable, but they are sort of worth asking over and over and in different ways the more you grow. You know, I mean, if for a child's conception of, say, death is never going to be answered, and a 14-year-old girl's conception of it is going to be different, but not, you know, it's never, and on 70-year-olds, you know? So I think all those mysteries that we confront, whether it's, you know, the mysteries in nature or human relationships, or why do parents get divorced, or what is love, or what is death, or what does it mean to be born? All those things, they're kind of persistent questions that get answered in small ways, but then sort of are keep being questions, right?
Of course. This was great. I think that this book is going to touch so many people. It is one of the books that I just tore through. I read it in maybe two sittings.
Oh, I'm so glad. Thank you for presenting it. And I hope that it reaches people and that it provokes them the same way it's provoked you.
Oh, wonderful. So, and we'll see you in May for a virtual event.
Absolutely. I can't wait.
Once again, this was Jessica with Syosset Library. Our guest today was
Marissa Silver.
And we are going to close this chapter of Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.